Welcome to another Grayscale Gorilla podcast. I'm your host today, Chad Ashley. In our virtual studio today, we have a very special guest. We've got Zach Corzine from Man vs. Machine on the show today, talking about how he got started in the industry, going all the way from back to when he was in school, all the way to being at one of the best motion design studios, I think, in the country, Man vs. Machine. We're going to talk about his journey, his process, how he likes to work, and of course, the training that he just put out recently on Grayscale Gorilla Plus. I highly recommend checking that out. In fact, you'll probably want to take advantage of our Grayscale Gorilla Plus memberships. Our special introductory pricing is only good up until October 31st, so you want to join now and save. And check out Zach's course. It is killer stuff. I've learned so much, not only about his techniques and his folder structure, but his ways of using MoGraph are very interesting. We're going to get into all this on the show. So sit back, relax, grab yourself a coffee, and enjoy the podcast. Yeah, I've been wanting to talk to you for a while and get you on the podcast because I'm a big fan of your work.
Thanks.
I just also think you're a really interesting and cool guy. I'm not just saying that.
I think you are just saying that, but I'll take it. I'll take it.
I'm definitely not, dude. You actually taught me how to play Dungeons & Dragons.
Oh, yes. I forgot about that. You were in town for SIGGRAPH. Yeah. And our good mutual friend, Trevor Kerr, was very interested in getting you introduced to Dungeons & Dragons, so I got to DM for you.
Yeah, that was definitely... I didn't know what to expect, to be honest, and Trevor yeah. has been trying to get me to do it for a while now. And so, you know, my history with it was like, you know, I knew about it when I was growing up and whatnot, but mm-hmm. I always thought of it as like this sort of... I don't know. I thought for some reason it was going to be more difficult or like have more rules or yeah. like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, there's like, there's definitely different ways to run it. Like I didn't really get into like tabletop games or, you know, D&D or anything until like a couple years ago, just cause I had a group of friends that were like super welcoming, about it and like were, like kind of created the right space to like, feel like I could get into it because it can definitely be a little intense, especially when, you know, people are doing proper role playing and getting all dressed up and everything as well. But
yeah, we didn't do that. We didn't get dressed up. But yeah, I mean, it was I'm trying to remember. It was me. It was you. It was Trevor. It was Aaron.
Yeah, Aaron Coverett. Yep.
And your girlfriend and yeah. Aaron's wife. And then.
Yeah.
Was that it? I can't remember. I feel like that might have been it. But yeah, we were. I'm trying to remember what our adventure was, but I know. Trevor got more and more inebriated as the yeah. mission went on, until he eventually died. Right? Like, didn't he die?
Yeah, yeah, he did. But we were so close to the end of the night. I think I just and I mean, he wasn't gonna, you know, recollect either way. So I think I just gave him the win on that one. Avoided the death.
Otherwise, you'd never hear the end of it when you get to work.
Yeah.
Oh, man. All right. So speaking of which, I want to tell people a little bit about your history and where you are now and all that sort of thing. But I think it's important to mention how I came to know you. And that yeah. was from, I believe it was when you presented at NAB. What was that? Like, a year, 2 years ago?
Yeah, I guess it was. Yeah, 2 years ago.
Yeah. Crazy. So I'd heard your name before, but I feel like when you did that presentation where you had like the cubes becoming spheres and like floating up into the air,
yeah,
there was an instant like buzz going around you. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of palpable. You know, like there was people talking about you like, oh, man, this guy's really good. You see his presentation. Oh, my God.
Yeah. Sorry to interrupt. It was it was a funny thing because it was like that was my first event like that. Just, you know, joining and attending in of itself. But then also my first event, like, you know, giving a presentation. So I really wanted to keep expectations as low as possible. So I think it was like during the like technical tests early on, somehow some of that like buzz got out a little bit. And I'm like, man, we gotta like keep these expectations low, because it's, you know, you gotta it's just setting me up for failure here. But
dude, you did a great job. Yeah, you killed it, man.
Yeah, it was fun.
And I think that it was then that I sort of saw a little bit how your brain works, which is really, especially when it comes to like Cinema 4D, I think you have a really unique take on how to manipulate the tools to get it to do what you want, which I think is fascinating. And lucky for us, you were kind enough to loan some of those brain cells over to Grayscale Gorilla Plus, where you are teaching an awesome piece of training over there. Procedural systems, I highly recommend it. We'll talk more about that later, but
cool.
Let's get back into the beginning. So you went to school, did you grow up in the Bay Area, or did you just sort of like start your career in the Bay Area?
No, I grew up there. There's a small town along the coast that's like a little less than an hour south of San Francisco. So I grew up there, super small town with nothing to do. So that was kind of like what really got me into, I grew up making music. So I was more on the audio side of things. And then it wasn't until in high school, I had a like amazing art teacher, which I feel like I hear about this a lot from a lot of different people, that like you have that one kind of pivotal person that changes everything. And mm-hmm. she was definitely that. She like, you know, had like really went out of her way to provide tools, and she had a computer with some old version of Photoshop on it, and was like really encouraging about all of that. So like, that was when I kind of started becoming more interested into the visual side of the arts. And I think like from there, it kind of just snowballed. Like once I like kind of got opened up into that world a little bit, I couldn't get enough. And then the music side of things just kind of slowly faded away.
So when you say music, are we talking like music at school, or were you in a band, or like what was the story there?
Yeah, it was a lot of like bands, and I just would like produce. I had a couple different friends who were like singers, so I'd, you know, produce beats for them, and just work on a lot of different music. It's that like that town is pretty awesome, because it's like it's small, but there's like a lot of talent, and like. It's definitely like very like nurturing towards the creative arts and stuff. So there was a lot of like inspiration in that aspect, and a lot of people I knew, whether or not, you know, it was like fruitful or whatever the case may be, it was definitely like inspiring. So yeah, just kind of explored a lot of different things. But
sounds like that art teacher was pretty instrumental.
Yeah, man. She's great. I still talk to her sometimes, and like we'll send her stuff that I'm working on. And
That's cool.
Yeah, she's the best, man. There's been a couple people in my life, my mother being the primary one, that like was just like monumentous, you know, like it's just like it just like changes the entire trajectory of your life, which you can't say about a lot of people, you know.
Yeah, that's awesome. I have a similar story. I had a teacher also in high school that really encouraged me, and you know, just kind of like pushed me, and I became like this, you know, the guy that hung out in the art room with all the art guys and the girls, and we just like hung out and had a good time, and like that was my experience. But so you end up falling sort of into art, and and you discover Photoshop, and then. How the heck do you end up doing motion design? Like what happens there?
Oh man. So that's way down the journey, actually. So after high school, I went to California College of the Arts, in San Francisco. They also have a campus in Oakland. But I only went there for a year and a half. One of the reasons being that I had a scholarship out of high school. And, once those funds kind of dried up, art school is
hold on, rewind. You had a scholarship for doing what?
For art? Yeah, for art, basically.
And this was to what school?
California College of the Arts.
Okay, so you got a scholarship there.
Yep, but it wasn't like, you know, any crazy scholarship. It was kind of just like a helping hand sort of deal. And yeah, man, art school is insanely expensive. So it was,
yes, it is.
Yeah. And so it was a combination of both that kind of, you know, laying its burden upon me. And then also, at the time I was a little like conflicted. Like I was going through like kind of rough patch and I wasn't sure if I really wanted to pursue art. Like I started becoming more interested in sociology and I was a little bit like, I feel like a lot of people, you know, as you kind of go through growing pains and stuff, you're just a little lost. Like you're a little like, I was really sure about this. Maybe now I'm not so sure. And so I ended up leaving CCA and, you know, just went to community college to finish credits and stuff and was kind of trying to just figure out what I wanted to do. And for a while I thought I wouldn't even pursue design or art or anything. I thought I was, you know, done with it. And after I finished kind of general education at the community college, I transferred to CSU. And this was another one. It's funny. This is another one of those like pivotal moments where they have like a transfer orientation at CSU. So we all like sat in on that and they kind of walk you through like, okay, so, you know, these are the different departments. Here's where you're going to go after this orientation. And it was only until like the end of this lady giving this kind of spiel about everything that she was like, oh, and by the way, if you want to change your major, just follow the department that you want to go to. And at that, like before that, I had thought because I had like declared my major when I transferred and everything, I thought it was like more
set in stone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so just that tiniest little thing of her being like, if you want to go to a different department, you can. And I think that was like that
you're like, oh my God, what do I do?
Yeah. And I think that was that thing where it like just kind of ignited something in me where it was like that, like, yeah, single moment where it was like, oh, like just kind of made me question everything. And I was just like, I think I really do want to go back to doing design. And so I just went with that department head and then filed the papers to like change my major and stuff. And yeah, man,
wow.
it was a journey, but yeah. So we're not even at how I got into motion design. So, you know, did the whole college thing and graduated from the CSU. After that, I, freelanced at a couple of places. I freelanced at like IDEO, which is a design studio. They have a bunch of locations, but there's one in Palo Alto that I freelanced at. I actually got an internship at Ubisoft, the video games company.
Nice. Yeah, I saw that on your LinkedIn.
Yeah. So that was actually kind of my first little taste in 3D. We were on the marketing side, so we would like work with the games development team, but we were purely making, you know, like the marketing materials and promotional stuff and
sure.
Like game cover art and all that type of stuff. But basically that was kind of early taste into 3D and stuff. Cause they would use 3DS Max there. We'd get like character rigs from the games department and, you know, like pose them up for the game covers and everything. And I was only there for like 6 months or so, but,
so was that sort of your first introduction into using 3D?
Yeah. In college I had Open Cinema and like messed around a little bit, but that was, and I kind of just like was like, oh, I don't know if this is for me kind of thing. But I remember I'd seen people who were just using Cinema to render out like, you know, flat graphics to use for whatever, like packaging and stuff. So I used a little bit for that, like just for very like simplistic patterns and stuff that I could use in designs. But I'd never really like, you know, like dove into 3D. So that was kind of my first, kind of bigger introduction into that. And we had, I can't remember his name right now, but we had this lead artist who was just a beast, man. He like, they had brought, he used to run his own production company that would do a lot of key art for different games companies. And they just kind of like bought him out and brought him in house. And mm-hmm. He basically led the whole department. He would like do, he came from more of a photography background too, which I think was super helpful just from, you know, like the glimmers of knowledge that I got from him. I remember we were working on the game cover for Rainbow Six Siege and like had to, you know, get in touch with the local police department to get all like guns clearance and stuff. And they would set up photo shoot and bring in all the people, then, you know, take some of the game environment from the games department and comp that together and stuff. And it was a cool time, man. It was definitely like one of those reassuring moments. Cause I remember just being like so inspired there and very like that, like fire getting lit under me a little bit
more.
I love
that.
Yeah, man. It was good.
I also think that anybody who does 3D that has a photography background immediately, in my opinion, has a leg up on those definitely. That don't, because it's just so much of the same principles, you know, like you just have to know that stuff. And for me, I came from a filmmaking background, like traditional filmmaking.
Yeah.
So not so much of like a traditional photographer, but from like a filmmaking perspective, there's so much that you can take into 3D from there too. So I highly recommend, if you haven't picked up a camera in a while, do it, because it's super useful in 3D. Yeah. All right. So you're at Ubisoft and you're freelancing there and you're ready to move on. Where do you go next? You got a little bit of experience, not a ton at this point.
Yeah, not a ton of experience. Had like a little bit, like a couple more things in my book. I managed to, it was interesting working there too, because like we're basically like a subsection of the larger company, and we're like, you know, creating marketing materials and stuff, but we would actually have to pitch against other companies. Like they would hire, so they would like, if we had to, you know, develop the branding for some new game that's being released, they would hire like two or three other companies to pitch, and then we would pitch. If you guys win,
man, that's nerve wracking, dude.
Yeah, you'd like pitch just to work on your own company's project.
What if you didn't make it? Would you just like, oh, I guess I'll go sit at my desk for 3 months and
they would just kind of fold us on to other stuff, but it was like cutthroat in that way, where it was like just the best work is gonna move forward, and if that's not you guys, then we're gonna like, you know, outsource it. So it was interesting, but it was good because it like, you know, I haven't really worked in house very much at places, and like that was nice because even though it was in house, I still got to kind of get introduced to like pitching environment and, you know, that kind of agility and just
that's good lessons to learn for sure.
Yeah,
and it's nice that there's a bit of a safety net too, because you're not necessarily pitching to win your dinner, you know, like you're still going to have a job at the end of the day, and you're still going to get rolled onto something else. But, you know, that sounds like it's a good area, a good sort of like testing ground to like really learn how to pitch right and hone your skills.
Yeah. Yeah. So then after basically internship ended there, I freelanced with them a little bit, and then it was kind of just like on a project by project basis. I forget. It was just, you know, kind of projects dried up for a month or so. And so I wasn't booked there, and I started looking at other opportunities. I got in contact with this recruiter, and he was kind of helping me get placement in like some ad agencies in San Francisco. And I got placed, luckily enough, at this small ad agency called Camp & King. It's in San Francisco. It's in the Presidio area, which is like really close to the Golden Gate Bridge, which is like a gorgeous area to work. Ended up staying there for 2 years, which was like kind of my main training grounds, I guess. And that was basically how I transitioned into motion design through my journey there. Cause when I started I pretty much started just as like a production designer. Like I was doing a lot of mechanicals, for like menus at restaurants and just like, you know.
So let me pause you there. I don't know what a mechanical is. I'm guessing a lot of our audience probably won't either. Can you tell us what that is?
Yeah. So it's, at the time we were working, for Del Taco, and
tacos.
And, I don't know if you like Del Taco tacos. I've never had it.
I don't know if I've ever had a Del Taco. Is that like a West Coast thing?
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's like a SoCal thing. I've never had it either. But I've heard that they are not worth, you know, venturing out for, but yeah.
Damn,
so
Del Taco's not going to like this podcast.
Yeah. Sorry, Del Taco. But yeah, so like for example, if, you know, someone designs some of the menus or some of the collateral stuff that would be in store, you have to set that up for, you know, for the printer and for like proper printing practices and stuff. So it's basically like you're after the designer kind of sets up everything. It's going into InDesign and just setting up the mechanical templates that can allow for printing and stuff. It's
got it.
Very riveting work, as you can imagine.
Yeah, it sounds exciting.
Yeah.
Okay. So you're there, you're doing some Del Taco work.
Yeah,
where,
yeah.
At which point do you start to learn Cinema 4D? I feel like you're now three gigs into your journey and you haven't really even touched it.
I know. Yeah. So I was there probably, I would guess like 8 months until like, so I started kind of transitioning more to traditional design stuff. I didn't really like doing the production design, and I was freelancing there the first couple months, made a good enough impression that they decided to hire me full time, started full time, and slowly kind of started showing more of my chops to allow to transition into better projects and work on more exciting things. So I was doing more kind of traditional design stuff, a lot of branding and, you know, everything from like logo designs to what have you. But after about 8 months, I think, of being there, we had started to kind of win some new clients. So we ended up getting Google for this like safety initiative project. And I was originally just doing a bunch of, basically got like trained to do within their branding guidelines and their illustration style to do a lot of like the Google illustrations and just kind of fit within their, they have very, you know, specific parameters under with which the illustrations need to look and everything. And so I was getting trained under that and doing a lot of different designs for them, which was fun. And there was one off piece that like needed animation. And I was like, I remember I had started becoming really like interested in animation. I think, mm-hmm. I can't say what it was. I remember like there was a point where I like came home one day and talked to Brittany, my girlfriend, and was like, I don't know if I'll be able to ever do this, but like, I really want to like get into animation. So I think when that was kind of the opportunity that arose where they were like, we really need animation on this. Like we're either going to bring someone in or whatever else. And I was like, I was just like, I can do it. And I didn't know how to do it, but I just was like, I'll do it.
I want to learn it.
Yeah, I'll figure out
how to do
it. Yeah, yeah. And so I just kind of dove in and then ended up doing a lot of different kind of one-off animation stuff for them. And then that kind of snowballed into, you know, every project that we were kind of working on, you know.
So like, was this a 3D animation or was
After Effects? After Effects, yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And then, yeah, just kind of grew from there. And then they ended up kind of the agency, they're really good at, the team there was amazing and were really supportive and kind of fostering of skills and stuff. And so they ended up setting up this like content lab is what they called it. And it was essentially like, we're going to make because a lot of, you know, early on the agency is pretty small and it was a lot of that stuff, you know, we were going to other production studios to create the work. And they were like, you know, for smaller stuff, that we can handle, we're going to have this content lab and we'll actually, you know, make it in-house and everything. So I basically got folded on to doing that. And so I was just creating a bunch of animated content. And then that kind of got me a little bit back into 3D. And then that was about the time too, as well, where I was like, okay, I really want to learn 3D. I really want to learn animation. And so I just started doing tests. Like I was just like, I'm just going to crank out tests. And it was like, it was a crazy point in my life because it was wildly unhealthy. Like I was just not sleeping every single day. I would just come home and sit at my computer and just like design.
And that was all Cinema, right? That you're doing.
Yeah,
that's
all Cinema. Yeah.
So where were you learning how to do all this stuff? Were you just like combing the internet, or were you just like exploring completely on your own, or what?
It was a little bit of both, but it was definitely guided. Like I would have like specific things that I was trying to do. It wasn't just like I was kind of like, I would have like a checklist kind of thing of like, I want to learn how to do this, I want to learn how to do this, and then would just kind of devote all my time to it. But yeah, it was both combination of just like learning through exploring and messing around with the tools, but also, you know, whatever I could find. I'm sure I devoured a bunch of GSG tutorials and stuff. And yeah, it was just like full force. I think like once that dam broke, I was like, okay, I instantly had an idea of where I wanted to be, and I knew how far I was from that. And I was like, okay,
so you were just going to put in the hours.
Yeah. I have to get there. And so I was just like, and I don't think I am there even yet, but it's like at the time it was like, you know, you're very far off. You're at the like very bottom of the mountain and you're like, all right, got to start trekking.
So you're basically like marathon. You're running a marathon in a sprint basically to try to like get to this place where you feel more comfortable in cinema and 3D and stuff. You said you're taking up all these hours. You're like, you know, coming home, just getting on the computer. How are you still having a girlfriend in all of this? Yeah. Like, dude, how did that work? Was she very like understanding about that time you spent?
Yeah, dude, it is a testament to her. She's incredible, man. She is like so supportive. We're just, like, we met in college, we had a web design class together, and just instantly like just had a connection, just like from so many different levels. Like she's an illustrator. And so like we just understand each other. Like she just knows, like in that case, you know, like she's very understanding of like, you have to do this, like this for you, this is something you have to do. I understand that you have to do it. I'll like support you in that. And like, and it goes both ways, you know, like I support her a ton in that stuff as well. And like, I think that was kind of, that was one aspect of the story, I guess I forgot to mention, like, even after I kind of decided to transfer back to majoring in design, I was still like, you know, struggling and kind of waffling a little bit on it. And like, when I met her, man, it was like, that was like a game changer. Cause she super inspires me. She super like pushes me.
Wow.
And yeah, I don't think I honestly, like, I wouldn't be here at all without her. It's like, we've just been a team ever since. Like, even we work on like projects together, which are always fun. Cause it's nice too. Cause like we're both in like adjacent industries. So like we have a, like, if it's a Venn diagram, you know, like we have like a little bit of overlap, but like,
oh yeah, you're both visual people too, you know, like that's a huge part of it.
Yeah. But it's nice that we're like in, you know, different camps as well. Cause then like when we work together on stuff, we bring different things to the table, which is amazing. Cause it's like, we're both visual. So we both have that like foundational understanding, but then, we each kind of cover different aspects of design and illustration and everything. So like, it's always fun getting to work with her on stuff. And she's also like, I'm working on stuff and we'll show it to her and like get critiques from her. And she's like helping me, you know, refine, you know, and having that was huge too. Cause it's like, you know, having someone that you can just bounce things off of, like, oh, what about this? What do you think about this? Like, and having like an outsider perspective is nice too, you know, like, cause she doesn't.
Yeah. That's key.
Yeah, man. And it's just funny. Cause like she'll suggest things where you're like, damn, like for someone who is just, you know, entirely outside the industry, she'll have some insights where you're like, oh man, yeah, that's a gem.
Yeah. I think that's great. You know, everybody needs that person, whether it's, you know, your girlfriend, your buddy, whatever it is, everybody needs that person whose opinion they trust.
Yes.
100%.
Yeah.
And you just need to find that person, and that becomes your go-to. I'm going to send you this. What do you think of that? How's this sound? And just like that sort of like, just having that extra pair of eyes sometimes is so important. I know it is for me. I've got a couple people like that in my life for different things. And without them, I feel like I'd be lost, because I would never be like 100% sure that this is my best.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think that's really cool, man, that you have that. And it sounds like a perfect sort of partnership. Are you able to do that for her as well with her illustration work? Does she show you her stuff? And
yeah. Yeah. And it's cool, man. Like it's really like fulfilling to be able to, and I think it you know, it's like mutual growth, because it goes both ways, where like, I feel like my work gets better just from like learning from her in terms of like how she's developing her side of work and stuff. And yeah, and it's nice to be able to like support each other in that way. And she's an illustrator, but she has like really good design chops as well, and help her out however I can. And it's like massive having that. I think like that's been the like key factor throughout my journey thus far, for sure.
Yeah, that's awesome. I feel like that's always so helpful to have that. So you at this point you're getting your chops up.
Mm-hmm.
You're getting better. You're checking stuff off your list of stuff you wanted to learn how to do or stuff you wanted to figure out. How does Maxon find you to bring you to that event? Like how did that come around?
Yeah. So I guess the like 3D stuff like just kind of snowballed a little bit as well, where I was doing a bunch of those tests. I can't remember what number I was up to, but I think I might've been up to like 45 or something. Like I was just posting.
What? Wow.
Yeah, I was just posting them on
prolific
Instagram.
Prolific over here.
I mean, it wasn't, they're not like inspiring it whatsoever. So it's not, it's like you, I mean, it's definitely funny to like look back on them and stuff. And, but yeah, it was like, I was kind of just cranking those out, like doing as many as I could, as fast as I could kind of thing. I mean, also it's like a balancing act, because you don't just like crank out stuff that you're not like proud of, but you know, trying to get them in a spot that I felt good about at the time. And so I think I was at like, I was getting up there in terms of how many tests I had. And then someone who was on the like social management side at the MBA saw my work on Instagram and reached out to me and was like, hey, do you want to freelance for us and do like social post stuff? And they do like post game, like comping in graphics on things and whatever the case may be. He's like, do you want to freelance for us? So I was like super excited about that. So I freelanced with them for about a year, just like at nights and stuff. And when they'd have a game, I'd kind of be on call for if there was like some crazy play that happened, just, you know, creating, comping in some animations to kind of highlight very like NBA Jam-esque stuff.
Okay.
Yeah. And when the Cavaliers won, I got to do the like announcement video on social that kind of showed all the players and the trophy and everything, which was like pretty big for me at the time. And that too, like I was just basically on retainer for them for about a year, and got to learn a ton from that, because I was just, you know, moonlighting on that at night while still working at the agency during the day. And so that was like a kind of big point that got me even more into animation, even more into 3D, because, you know, you're the day job having to do the content lab stuff and work on client projects, and then at night working on stuff for the MBA. So it was just like a good time to kind of throw me into the fire a little bit. And then, yeah, so then after that, I ended up working at the agency for a handful of more months. And then I kind of got to the point where I felt like I outgrew it a little bit and just was really itching to go freelance. So I decided to leave and go freelance, and freelanced around San Francisco for a little over a year. And just I made a decent amount of connections with different producers and different like art directors and stuff. And so they kind of moved on to other agencies as well, and kind of thankfully recommended me. So I was able to kind of just work at a bunch of different ad agencies, a lot of like direct to client stuff for like Google and different tech companies and stuff, as they're okay. Very prevalent up there.
So it sounds like you were doing a lot of, you're freelancing not at like motion design studios or post houses or animation companies, but more in like an ad agency sort of world, which is kind of unique.
Yeah. I feel like tech up there is just like all engulfing. And so it's hard to kind of escape those. Those are kind of like various black holes that people just kind of get sucked into and you never hear from again.
Right.
It was kind of just kind of balancing all that. Like, you know, I did some projects for Google that I was really proud of and had fun working on. And it was nice because a lot of them too, it's like, you know, they're smaller projects that are just like one kind of sub team within one like larger like section of Google and stuff. So they're like, they're putting out some promotional thing for some initiative that team's working on. And so it's funny because it's like, they're, you know, one of the most massive companies in the world, but they're like, oh, our budget, you know, for this specific project, you know, is pretty small. So we can only bring on like a single freelancer to create this content for us. So you get to kind of spearhead that stuff, which was good too, because it kind of puts all the weight on your shoulders in a way that forces you to kind of adapt and learn stuff.
Were you ever tempted to like take a full-time gig at one of these tech companies? I know that's a pretty popular route a lot of motion designers are taking these days.
Yeah, I was definitely tempted. I got offered a few times and I thought about it, but yeah, I just wasn't like, I feel like, especially me, like I just, again, I wasn't at the point that I wanted to be at all. And I was like, I'm not ready to like just settle down somewhere that I don't feel like is gonna, I don't know, push me into the realms that I'm trying to get to. And so like, I was like, I'm just not ready to do that.
Like, was it that you wanted to learn? You felt like you didn't know enough, or yeah, you felt like you haven't done enough?
I guess a little bit of both. It's mostly that I haven't learned enough and I still feel like that, you know, and like, I want to surround myself with people. And and that's not to say that like, if I went to, you know, Google or Apple or whatever, that I wouldn't learn a bunch, but it was just, I just didn't feel like I was ready to stop kind of pushing in the direction that I wanted to go, I guess. So yeah.
Well, I guess it worked out for the best because you're at Man versus Machine now, which is basically one of the best companies in the world doing motion design. I don't think anybody would argue with that. So tell me, like, you're freelancing around. I'm still trying to figure out, how the heck does Maxon find you? Was it, did they see you at an event, or did you send them something?
It was, so I'd been freelancing for about a year. I was still doing like tests and stuff, which I always do. I just like kind of post personal work of things that I'm either trying to learn, or if it's like, you know, something I was working on for a client project gets killed and then I kind of adapt it for my own thing or whatever the case may be. So I was just posting random explorations and designs and stuff. And Matthias actually found me on Instagram and messaged me and was like, hey, would you ever want to, you know, give a talk at one of our events kind of thing? Like, we'd love to have you. And I was like, holy yeah, of course.
Did you know who he was at that point?
No, not at all. I thought it was, dude, I legit thought it was like a scam. I was like, okay.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Who is this? Like, who is like trying to like, you know, pull my chain kind of thing?
Yeah. That's funny.
And yeah, so then it was not like there was an upcoming event in the near future. So I was like, yeah, of course, I'd love to do it. And then didn't hear from him for a while. And then it was like, I think early next year that I like decided to email him and was just like, hey, I just wanted to follow up. Like, if, you know, there's like a spot for me in any event coming up, I'd love to give a talk. And he was like, oh, you emailed me, actually like perfect timing. Cause I was like just putting together the artist list and like, yeah, we would love to have you. And then he was kind of like, I'm looking through your work and you have like, it seems like you do a lot of client stuff and then you do a lot of personal stuff. Do you want to give like two talks, one on client
that's
stuff?
That's the classic Matthias trick right there. You fell for it.
Yeah, I fell right
yeah,
in.
Yeah, you could really do two if you wanted to.
Yeah, I fell face first into that one. I was like,
oh, that's funny.
Cool. That's cool. But yeah, it was good because then I got to like split it up. I didn't feel like I was forcing everything into one. And I think my personal, the NAB talk that was more on kind of my personal exploration stuff, which I think is the one that you're referencing, that one's just more successful because I it's just things that intrigue me more. And at the time I wasn't, that was kind of my drive too, to try to find a company like Man vs. Machine or, you know, somewhere that I felt like I could do the work that I did, you know, in my personal tests, like full time. Like it was very separate. Like it was very like, this is the work I do when I'm on the clock. This is the work I do when I'm off the clock. And those do not bleed into each other. And I really wanted to do the work I was doing off the clock and like just get to do that full time.
Well, I think that's a classic theme, right? You have to do the work that you want to be doing. Mm-hmm. No matter if you're getting paid for it or not, because ultimately, that's the only way it'll happen. You know, nobody's going to hire you to make, I don't know, spaghetti. If you never make spaghetti, like you got to go home and make spaghetti every night, like, and just do it until somebody's like, oh, that guy makes spaghetti, let's hire him.
But
I remember that show. And, you know, I was with, I think that's the year I drove across the desert with Trevor and he was going with a specific intention of recruiting you.
And I didn't know that at the time, which is
he was like, I got to watch this this kid. I don't know if he said kid. I'll just say kid because it sounds cooler. And like, we're going to get this kid and we're going to like, I need, you know, I want to recruit him. He looks amazing. Make sure he's not a jerk, all that sort of thing. Yeah. And so, yeah, we met you there, and turns out you were super good. And also you're also a really good speaker too. And I think that's also something that, it's a rare combination when you can find somebody that can put a presentation together that can hold interest and people are into it, and you're showing some techniques that maybe somebody hasn't thought of before, but you're doing it all in a way that's approachable.
Yeah, totally.
I think that's important.
Yeah, I think that's like one of the most important things, actually. Even if it's not necessarily like public speaking, even if it's like, you know, when you're building a deck and you're trying to sell something through the client or something, it's all about your ability to like coherently push forward something and get people's interest in it. Cause you can't just, you know, throw something out into the world and not like give it foundational support that'll kind of move it forward and stuff. So that's like definitely a really important aspect, whether it's, you know, public speaking or if it's just, you know, working on client work, whatever it may be.
Yeah. Yeah, man. And so you do the show, you blew everybody's minds with all the crazy MoGraph stuff that I want to talk about that in a minute. But yeah. So you end up getting Trevor's like, oh, you should come check out Man vs. Machine, you know, blah, blah, blah.
In proper Trevor fashion, he, right after I gave my first presentation, I think he messaged me. He's like, hey, yeah, we should chat or whatever. And then I met up with him, and the first thing he complimented, he's like, your file structures were really organized. That was the thing.
Wow, dude, that's like a really big compliment from him. Like, I would be like, whoa, okay, cool.
Yeah.
Like, that's so perfect. And that is amazing.
Yeah.
So yeah, you're like, oh, okay. Yeah. Thanks, man. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
And then how does that work? Does he then hook you up with the Man V guys and you do an interview? Yeah. And it just like,
I literally did an interview in my Vegas hotel room.
No way. Came there or you did it over the phone?
No, just over the phone. But I was like, it was the next day. I was just like in my hotel room talking to
were you just like calling your girlfriend? Like, can you believe this?
Well, she was there. She came out.
Oh, she was there.
Yeah.
Dude,
yeah.
Were you guys freaking out?
Yeah. Yeah, dude. It was, and the thing was too, was like at the time before I had talked to Trevor, I'd give my second presentation and he was like, he had gone back to LA at that point. So he's like, oh, I'm like, you know, I'm going to watch it over the stream and everything. And I like my first one, I was really proud of, like, I really felt like it like encompassed me and my work. And the second one, like, it, again, it's like, it's good. It's fine for what it is, but it's like, it's the client work stuff. It's the stuff that I'm like, I'm not necessarily like super into. And so like, I was like, I didn't want him to watch that one. I was like, this is going to like change your mind. This is going to like,
yeah. So. You know what? I only had one presentation. It's good. You can go back. That's fine. All good.
Yeah. But I think he texted me after I finished or whatever. And I was like, oh yeah, good job. So,
well, you know, the thing is I think that a good studio and recognizes stuff that was maybe a client's decision and maybe not your design or your direction.
Yeah.
So it was good that you did two presentations, because imagine had you just done one and you chose to do your client work that maybe wasn't. Everything. Yeah. And then that path wouldn't have never opened up, or maybe not have opened up right away at least. And I think it was probably a good decision.
Yeah. I think thanks to Matthias for
I mean, I talked to a lot of people and there's like, there's little key moments that happen in everybody's career, everybody's lives that just sort of like come together. And I think if you're open to the journey, if like, imagine you're like on a like inflatable raft on a river or something. If you are sitting there trying to constantly paddle to some side or like maybe go against the stream, you're just going to get frustrated and it's just going to be life's going to be really tiring.
Yeah.
But if you sit in there and you just kind of go with it and you just see where it goes and you take advantage of the turns and the forks when they're presented to you, good things can happen. I believe that.
Yeah, totally.
So you're still at Man V, is that correct?
I am. Yeah. Been there for a year and a half now.
So what kind of stuff have you been doing there? Like what's some of the stuff that listeners might recognize?
Yeah. I've done all types of projects there. It's been like a whirlwind, and you know, moving down to LA and everything as well. And it's been incredible. It's been definitely the like most fruitful past year and a half of my life by far. But yeah, I've worked on a lot of, you know, the projects have come out through Man V. There's obviously London, so we're somewhat connected with them. Like there's certain pitches and different projects and stuff that we'll work with London on. But a lot of the time, you know, LA's office is working on projects and London's doing their own thing as well.
How many people are in the Los Angeles office and the London office?
London, I think, is almost 30. And then LA, how many are we now? I think like 14.
So not huge.
No, not huge at all. We've grown a lot. Like when I got brought on, with three other people as well. Joe Ball, which I think you've worked with in the past.
Joe Ball, he's my boy.
Yep.
Yeah, Joey, we worked Ball together a long time ago back at DK.
Yeah, yeah. And then Brendy Wegner started, and then Bryant, which I guess people would probably know more on Instagram or whatever. Bryant is Bryant Plus, and then Brendy is Brendy LW. And all four of us got kind of brought on around the same time. It was kind of like Man V LA 2.0 sort of deal, where they were trying to just, you know, kind of bolster up the ranks and everything. So when I started, it was even smaller. Like that was like a big push to kind of bring people in. And since then we've hired, I guess like three additional people, and we have Aaron Coverett in now. He's been freelancing with us for a while.
That guy's so good.
Yeah.
He's got a killer awesome team over there.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been amazing, man. Like it's cool too, like coming in kind of during that like 2.0 push sort of deal. Cause you really feel like, you know, you're part of this small team that's trying to build this thing as it moves along. And you really get to like contribute to the trajectory and really like, you know, grow to be a part of the team. And we've just been continuing to do that, and it's been a good journey so far, for sure.
Yeah, I feel like that team, you guys are also pretty close. It seems like you guys hang out outside of office hours and play Dungeons and Dragons and whatnot. Uh-oh, Trevor's calling my phone right now.
Oh, is it
secret? he knew we were about to talk about it. He's like calling me. I'm gonna dismiss that call.
Yeah,
which I think is great. I feel like I've always loved the office camaraderie that happens under intense deadlines and creative stress. I feel like as bad as those moments can sometimes be, it can sort of bond you in a way that just doesn't happen in sort of regular freelance interactions. I feel like a full-time team together hashing it out, you just end up, I don't know, you end up getting a better chemistry sometimes.
Yeah, totally agree.
It's just, yeah.
And that also, I think that also takes a bit to foster, you know, like it takes a bit for your team to kind of learn everyone's strengths, learn like, you know, where the overlap is and stuff, and just kind of get the like synergy going. I don't think it's like a thing that's easy. And it's also one of those things where like when the right group of people come together, that's when kind of like magical things happen. But you can't like predict that or force that. And it just, you kind of just, it's definitely like a work in progress kind of thing. And I agree. I think like it's important that the people feel like they like and respect each other and will, you know, hang out outside of work as well. And you kind of just build a little family and a community. And it definitely feels like that. Like,
that's great.
Yeah.
I think that's the stuff, man. Like if you, when I was leading a team back in the day, my biggest thing was like, I want to create an environment where everybody feels sort of protected to do the work that they want to do.
Yeah.
And really, you know, it was my job to sort of like create the environment to let that sort of foster all the stuff that you mentioned. Mm-hmm. I just was like, you know, building the room in which I would hope this would happen in.
Yeah.
Luckily it did. So whenever you have good, talented people like that and you create an environment where they feel comfortable and they feel safe to create and do weird stuff or make mistakes, and then I think it's good. I think it's a healthy thing.
Yeah, agreed.
So let's talk a little bit about your approach in Cinema 4D. I feel like I wanted to talk about this because I think from what I've seen of your work and definitely some of the early word coming back from people watching your training is like, wow, I hear a lot of the same things. It's like, oh, I never thought that MoGraph could do that, or I never thought I could do MoGraph like that, or what is this? What program is this? You have a unique style. You tend to like come at things from a very a different perspective. Like I would say a lot of times it makes perfect sense, but it's not always that method that you go where you tend to keep everything live and procedural and layering things up, and it's very hierarchical. Where did you learn that, or did you just stumble on that?
I guess I kind of stumbled on it a little bit. It's just kind of, it's one of those things where I guess it just comes from my like nature or my just kind of general approach to things. It just always felt like the way that I like to work in general. And then within like cinema, just like it never felt good to me like baking stuff down or doing like any steps that like were irreversible or that, yeah, weren't like dynamically updatable or like it. I obviously you have to do that, and cinema isn't the most fostering program for trying to do that. Like it's not necessarily built for procedural systems.
Well, I mean, I would argue that it's better at it than some. Yeah. Having used Maya before, I would say it's definitely, well, before Bifrost at least, but. Yeah, I feel like I get what you're saying, though. But the thing is like, here's what's kind of crazy to me, and maybe I'm wrong on this, but you end up going to Man versus Machine, where they're pretty heavily into Houdini. I mean, that's one of their big tools. How are you not, like, given how your nature is to keep everything procedural and you're sort of pushing cinema in a way that maybe most people wouldn't think to?
Yeah.
How have you not just like, oh, I'm just going to use Houdini?
Well, I'm like currently and forever on my Houdini journey. So I, you know, use it kind of where I can and where it, you know, my current understanding allows me to. But I just like having both and just kind of being able to utilize whatever tool feels right for me. And maybe that's not, you know, there's definitely some Houdini dude who could do what I'm doing in cinema, but just for me and my kind of process, sometimes it feels right to kind of keep it within C4D. But yeah, I think like I currently try to just branch out as much as possible. Like within C4D, I'll do a lot of stuff that's just like native or even X particles or use Houdini on a shot. It kind of just depends on what I'm trying to tackle and, you know, my own current skill set and everything kind of taken into account.
Has Trevor been pressuring you as much as he's been pressuring me?
Yeah. Well, like, I think the thing too is like, whenever I do use Houdini and continue to use it and learn it, like I'm sure eventually I'll get to the point where I use, you know, cinema less and less and just kind of utilize it where scene setup and lighting and rendering and everything. But
yeah, that's a pretty unique thing that I think a lot of people, maybe they know this. Maybe let's tell them anyway. So I know that, so ManV uses a pretty mixed pipeline. You got a lot of cinema, you got a lot of Houdini, your basic Adobe stuff, I assume.
Yep.
Now I think most people would assume that like, oh, they did that entire thing in Houdini, but that's not always the case, right?
No, it's like, especially because, you know, with such a small team, we, like I kind of said, it's important that everyone covers like a different aspect and that like we're all generalist first and foremost. So we all, you know, can kind of pick up a lot of things from other people, and it just allows that kind of adaptability and things to kind of flow throughout the studio. But like everyone definitely has their specific aspect that they're focused on and that they're strongest with. So we have a few people that are just like rock star designers, really solid designers that will just do like killer style frames, killer like look development stuff, but don't use Houdini much, if at all. There's a lot of people who kind of mix of both, which kind of includes me, where I'm just a little bit all over the place. And then, you know, there's technical directors like Trevor, who's just like all about 100% Houdini. But you know, still uses Cinema to, I think that's the kind of, cohesive factor there, is
the connective tissue. It sounds like.
Yeah, exactly. That's the kind of connective tissue, is that like we, everything kind of flows through, Cinema. That's kind of the workhorse. That's kind of the like central node that everything flows back into. So that's what kind of ties everything together. So even, you know, people who, the TDs who are working in Houdini, that ultimately, you know, comes back into Cinema, and that's where we do all our final setup and lighting and everything.
So I imagine when you first saw Fields and new Field Forces, you were probably like, wow, this is going to be good for me.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It was funny, 'cause it was after I gave that talk, Rick Barrett was like, hey, I need to show you something. And like took me behind the booth and was like, we're working on Fields. And
you're like, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah. And he was like super excited. And I was like, man, I should have gotten this to me like a few months ago. I could have really made use of it. 'Cause I think my talk at the time was like if I had Fields, it would have made a lot of those things.
Yeah.
A lot more.
I remember there's like a ton of effectors and like all sorts of stuff going on.
That's the one thing, man, is like Fields, if anything, is just kind of like unified a lot of that stuff and just made a lot of the setups so much lighter. 'Cause you can just have 20 different drivers being all driven by, you know, the same fall off. You're not like, it's not tied in.
Dude, that's huge.
Yeah, that just makes a big difference. That's kind of the main thing. I feel like everything else, like obviously having the like essentially like layer adjustments that you can do on top and blending modes and stuff, is useful. But I think like primarily the whole thing of just like opening that up to like be able to not have to do all these cumbersome setups that like really don't need to be, where you were essentially before copying the same thing over and over again and changing like one parameter, and you're like, dude, this doesn't need to be like
that. You're lost, you know. You try to open that file up a month later and you're like, what was I even doing? I don't even know what this is. I will say that my criticism on Fields and Field Forces and stuff has nothing to do with the features themselves, but I do wish there was a node interface.
Yes. It needs
to, because it's just, come on, man. Like the layer based approach, I understand it. Like I understand that that was a UX decision that was made because it was the most familiar and it was going to be the easiest to sort of onboard people. Mm-hmm. But I feel like, and maybe I'm crazy, but I feel like there's a whole generation of artists coming up understanding nodes, and they're just like, nodes are no big deal, man. Like, I get it. Stuff flows in, stuff flows out.
Yeah.
I got it. So you got to have it. I feel like they got to bring that to X Particles too. I feel like that's another one that I'm like, I can't, like, the second I try to get too complicated in X Particles, I just throw my hands up. I'm like, all right, I'm lost. I don't even know what I'm doing here. It's like stuff everywhere. I don't know what that.
Yeah,
it's too much.
Yeah, it gets convoluted super quick. And yeah, I agree, man. It should be node based, especially because like you're saying, with like, you know, having Fields kind of trying to be more accessible to past users, when it should be, you know, moving towards the future of users and kind of setting that precedent for people who are coming in fresh, just because then that like slowly moves the industry more in that direction and stuff, or people just purely who are using Cinema or whatever. But like that, it should, you know, I definitely like wish that it had a node-based system, and same thing with X Particles. It definitely is like, it's just not like easily translatable thing as well. Like you're learning something that's kind of arbitrary and kind of like a specific way to work that doesn't necessarily like, it doesn't translate.
There's a level of abstraction that is unnecessary.
Yeah, exactly.
Because it's not like, and I would argue, like I do like some of the aspect of the Fields layer based approach. I mean, for simple stuff, it makes sense. Mm-hmm. But I do think that you're adding a level of abstraction that doesn't necessarily mean a lot.
Yeah.
I feel like in a node based environment, where the user is like dropping down, let's say, a random field or something with a random field node, and they want to subtract something out of it, it makes a lot of sense in a node-based workflow to just like add a subtract node and then plug your whatever it is that's going to be subtracting into that.
Yeah.
And then, you know, being able to pipe off different areas and reuse things, and it just makes a lot of sense. I hope that someday happens. I think their node-based material editor is amazing. It looks great. It's I've used it and some training. I hope that someday they figure out how to get it into the other renderers, because ultimately that must have been tough to like develop such a killer looking material node interface for a renderer that most people probably aren't using, or maybe not even the people that were using it probably wouldn't want to use nodes. So it's kind of like tough, but hopefully we'll be able to get to use that soon.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. Well, man, I feel like we covered a lot here.
Yeah, we have.
So is there any sort of, I want to talk a little bit about the training before we go, and mostly like what do you hope people out there watching this training, what do you hope they get out of this at the end of the day?
Yeah. So I think like originally when I was working on it and speaking with you about like developing the training, I like ultimately, you know, wanted to make sure that it was like project-based and more top level, that felt like a kind of comprehensive approach to like client work and developing conceptual work for clients, and like not having something that feels like universal and adaptable to whatever specific workflow or whatever specific programs you're using. It ultimately should be more about, you know, the process and proper practices, and I just hope that it's, you know, valuable for people in that regard, that it just gives a sense of, you know, my personal process when approaching work. And I don't think this is necessarily, you know, dependent on the tools I use at all. And then specifically with like the procedural system stuff, I really want to just inspire people to, you know, be as procedural as possible, like even within Cinema 4D. And hopefully, you know, for a lot of people, maybe this is like a stepping stone into more procedural setups that brings them, you know, more towards Houdini, and can just kind of like, I think the more, you know, the more we can kind of move in along that path, the better. And I think specifically with like some of the approaches within C4D, there's just some stuff that I haven't seen people do. And I think that, yeah, you can be more procedural than you think you can. And hopefully like that'll just kind of like open things up as well to just kind of moving more towards that approach. So that's right. That's really what I was focused on with the training, is just keeping it, you know, project based. And just really, you know, I think like the like, you know, the like looping animation that like we've posted that has kind of been on like GSG Plus as well, is like, that's kind of the enticer to get people in and stuff. And I think maybe people see that and it's like, oh, how do I create that thing? But it's really not about creating that thing, right? Like it's not.
Yeah, it's about a way of thinking.
Yeah. And you shouldn't just like use it. I don't want it to just be like a tutorial. Like it's like, okay, press this. This is how you get this kind of thing. Like I obviously felt like I had some obligation to do that, to like show specifically how.
Well, I mean, at the end of the day, somebody does want to make something.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's like you want to like tease that in. And that's also why, you know, I have a section of going through, you know, look development, doing style frames and stuff. And we provide those like scene files so you can check those out and everything. And like, but again, it's like, it's not really about that. Like I didn't want it to be like, this is a tutorial of specifically how to make this thing. Like we have too much of that. And I don't entirely think that that's really valuable, because it's not teaching the thinking or the thought processes or, you know, the design practices that you can apply to projects. It's not giving like fundamental understanding that will elevate kind of everyone and just translate to anything, you know. Like it's, those are the things that are infinitely more valuable. So hopefully like, you know, you can well, I wanted it to be something that is not just a tutorial. It's definitely not a comprehensive approach, which, yeah. So I hope that it's valuable to people. I really was like, I've kind of had this in my head a little bit for a while, and it feels nice to kind of check off that box and feel like I was able to put this out and
it's great stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, everybody that's been watching it has been saying really, really positive things. And it's no surprise. It's a great piece of training. And like you said, I feel like the most valuable training isn't necessarily showing you A over B equals C or whatever. You know, I do think there's a place for that training, and I do enjoy that training too when I'm learning a specific tool or I'm learning some software. But the technique stuff is always, I have a piece of training on Grayscale Gorilla Plus 2, which is about my process and doing product renders and stuff like that. And I think that stuff is great, because I always loved watching other people work, whether they're just doing, you know, setting up a scene file, or maybe they're just making a folder structure or whatever it is, because you get a nugget, you see something in there that can apply to your work, and you can take that and put it in your toolkit. And I think there's a lot of gems in what you're doing over on Grayscale Gorilla Plus. And I know I've taken quite a few things already from that training. Nice. Just the way that you approach things procedurally, there's some tools in there that I didn't even know about. So I highly recommend everybody checking it out. We'll put a link in the show notes. If you haven't checked out what Zach has done over there, please do. Anyway, dude, thank you so much for being on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me, man. It was fun.
Yeah, this was a good episode. Everybody out there, thanks for listening. Be sure to give us a review. It always helps our ranking. And you know, share it with a friend. Why not, right? Anyway, thanks again, Zach. Really great talking to you.
Thanks, Chad. Thanks for having me.
All right, everybody. We will see you in the next podcast.
See ya.